Blog Talk Radio.
Never alone. You are never alone. We are all grieving, but dealing with grief by
process grief in a better manner. So I want you guys to get the follow the grief process so that we could talk about that. Because everybody doesn't understand grief. Some people get busy when they're grieving. Okay? Everyone deals with grief. Just I want you guys to understand that. Because people will laugh. Some people will cry. Some people will visit themselves before. And then others will even throw up or feel numb or feel some type of sick and upset. Some recover quickly and some do not. And then also that grief is a natural feeling. It's a natural level up. We've all been through it. I have gone through it. You've gone through it. We all have gone through it. Somewhere along the way, we've all lost somebody that's important. My dad, my granny, that's my adopted granny. I don't call her adopted granny. That's my granny. That's my dad. Although I have a real big dad. She's living. I still love her. But the thing is, I don't know her. But my granny's dad, my granny, like I told y'all, I still grieve over her today. But I'm coping with it better than I did at 19. And I want you guys to understand that. Because when we're thinking about the process and recovering quickly, it depends on the person and who they're going to. So I want you guys to understand the natural healing process, and there's no right way to do it. But there is a way to have decorum and a level of passage of the body and passage of the person and having them in a manner of, I'm going to make sure we celebrate your life. I'm not going to remind people of what happened in your life or things that you may have done bad. I'm going to focus on the good. I'm going to shift positive light on your life and I transition you from a level of in physical to a level of eternal life. Eternal or into heaven or wherever you're going. So like I told you guys, it's no right way. But in our past and in our ritual forms, the funerals, the food, like I told you guys, when we go to the food, and you know how it is at the food, and everybody wants to act up, everybody wants to bring up things, everybody wants to talk about money, everybody wants to talk about estate, everybody wants to talk about assets, but they don't want to talk about what was good about the person and what it benefits them. So what I told you guys, we got to learn that grief is complicated. It's complicated because we don't know everything. And maybe that's good. But when it's our favorite that dies, a celebrity or someone, a household name, and when they pass, and their few, their levels of right to have to pass on to the next world and beyond the flesh and the physical to a level of eternal circle of life, and they basically complete the square, complete the circle of life, and now they're back at one, once a man, twice a baby. So then you understand the transition of going back to the circle of life and going back to where you came from to be with God or whatever God you serve. So with that being said, for some people, grief can become too painful. If you want something differently, then it can become a level of anxiety, depression, or manifesting levels of where I want to talk about mental health. And I want to talk about behavioral health and emotional health and emotional healing. And other times, sleep might be far too long and take over a person's life for years on end. I want you guys to understand it because it's happened to me. Because sometimes grief is so deep and grief is so long and so many pain, suffering factors and variables in that grief or whatever caused that grief. And I want you guys to understand what I'm saying. When we're thinking about our grief, and I want you guys to check that 866-279-323 at our 444-1854. That's the last text that you text that's on during the show, and I'll see it. Or you can call our pastor and everything else to get you guys to the After Dark show and everything else you can walk by, and we'll be sitting on the phone and talking while we're doing our own podcast. Yeah. So when we're talking about levels of layers of grief and how we can get to a point of information to understand what it is, grief can be at that point. So let me explain normal grief theory and greatly between cultures and people. And then on top of that, situations that are manifesting behind the grief. Maybe a grief is a natural process, as I said, and does not have a linear way of treatment or being effective for being able to help it heal. And it's about different people absolutely become complicated in their grief and their grieving process because it may be layers of variables and factors that are affecting their grief healing process or their coping with the loss. And then there's complicated grief that can be treated with psychotherapy and mental health intervention or level of what we call behavioral health or CBT, DBT, right, and all another touch therapy, personal motor therapy, and being able to just do the footwork and the groundwork of psychotherapy as a layer of that. And in this, I want people to understand that grief can really take it down the root to the point that it's poison. I can liken this to poisonous air. I can liken this to a poisonous person. I can liken this to a poisonous husband or a poisonous friend or a poisonous level of partner or a poisonous level of people who are just going to have full misconduct and abuse of the devices. They can cause grief and cause a war of morality, welfare, and recreation within the organization. So think about this in the sense of how that works and how people can end up in a level of stage grief and sometimes not getting out of that. Here's why. When we think about our grief, when we're thinking about acute grief, right, we have layers in between complicated grief and levels of what we call normal grieving. And we go from acute grief to integrated grief, and that's normal. But we've forgotten the two other layers of grief, which is complicated grief and integrated grief, but it's being competed by situation. So let me break it down to you about acute grief. Immediately after loss and a month afterwards, it's normal to have an intense feeling of grief and upset, anger, or some type of layer of shock, distress, sadness, or appetite, or levels of trouble, sleeping, or poor concentration, or behavioral issues, or deficit from grief manifesting from loss. Be it whether it's a car accident or whether it's a poison, whether it's anything outside of a marriage falling apart or a red flag situation, being married to a narc or through a narc and just finding that out, or being divorced from a narc such that and just finding out things 20, 30 years later, 15 years later, 10 years later. It causes a lot of complicated grief, an integrated grief, and it goes hand in hand. So when we think about the normal grieving process, we do it from acute grief, talks about the level of layers of complicated grief, which means acute, complicated, and integrated grief are unity and synonymous with each other. And the symptoms slowly diminish through the passage of time, and that's acute grief. So it's kind of like adult stabilization. When somebody is presented, they've been through level terrorism, domestic terrorism, or emotional abuse or torment, gaslighting, bullying, or any type of loss, and they lose somebody in their family, and then they end up having meltdown. It doesn't mean that they're nuts. It doesn't mean that there are any type of diagnoses. It means they're acutely needing to be stabilized because something is unstable in it now, but they call outside factors or what the outputs that are affecting the inputs and the cognitive process of therapy of figuring out, okay, how do I deal with this from point A to point B, X, Y, C, 3, 4, 3, 4. But when you get to grief stages, the complicated grief, sometimes the symptoms of acute grief never go away. So you're ending up in people last for years or can last for 5 weeks. And then on top of that, a loss of a loved one continues to feel unreal, unimaginable. And that's when we're talking about coping mechanisms and things like that in some kind of manner. Then we think about what can be done. Behavioral health, mental health therapy, sometimes intervention with a therapist, life coach, things like that. Or if your life coach is actually a certified MSW, LSW, then being able to deal with different things, or certified life coach to help you with the grief process and understand what acute, complicated, and integrated grief is. So with that being said, it helps you to understand so your focus is better and know exactly what stage you're at. So you can begin to go into the rational, golden part of the therapy, the red part of the therapy, not the cognitive part, but the rational motive part, and then putting the seed in there, cognitively processing it through play, and then psych therapy adds on to that. So you got that pyramid of behavioral health, mental health, and then on top of that, therapies that go therapeutic, and then you have the pyramid top, the peak of the medical pyramid, of saying to yourself, if it's acute grief, if it's complicated grief, if it's integrated grief, at the top peak of this, how do I move that grief down this road through behavioral mental health? And then what treatment and treatment plans to psychotherapy are levels of what we call coaching or alignment or gap interim while you're going through level of psychotherapy or what we call counseling on a higher level to diagnosis if you're developing levels of behavioral management issues or mental health issues from dealing with that type of loss and grief. So I want you guys to understand that and we can attract you to the integrated grief, which is after resolving most intense symptoms of acute or complicated grief, and getting into what you can do to line one stage of integrated grief and think not end up being triggered or upset from something else happening or a level of layer of serious unfortunate events. I want to explain to you guys in a short form to help you guys understand it. And then on top of evidence to help me guys understand it from the point of mental health and behavioral health and emotional healing and be able to pinpoint, have you ever been in a grieving situation like that? I was like that with when Blaney died, it hurt me so. But the thing is, I'm able to integrate grief into that acute grief and they get the integrated grief and learn how to be resilient in that. They'll talk to me and be an example of what I went through all the family after Blaney died and things like that. And my life was like pretty much pretty good. And it's been long until my life got altered egregiously, and egregiously based on other things that are happening overlapping that were blamed for my time. But now it's coming from circle, so I have a greater understanding of it. So I stopped grieving as badly, and I'm learning how to process my emotional health, my well-being, and things like that, and put myself here first, because there's no kind of, it's in store for me in my life to move out of that and get to a journey of healing, resiliency, and coping with that grief and that loss that I felt before. But the complicated grief loss is a doozy. It's like, it hits you so hard that you, it's like when you get knocked down, except there's no love, there's a whole level of, I can't believe it sucks, or it knocks us off the seat, because it may be our favorite, or it might be a family member, or it might be our spouse, it might be our dating partner, it might be somebody that we grew up with, and then when it hits us, we're like, and we don't know what to do, because you're like, what do you mean? Oh, so do what? They got a hoop. And then when you think about, oh, Lord, I've got to go process this, then, but I think about, okay, here's the food feeling, then we got to deal with people we haven't talked to in ages, and we don't know how they're going to act. So then you got to go look at that complication of that grief, and if they're hitting family layers, or if it's non-family, you're dealing with somebody's stone, or you don't know, or you've been around somebody who's new somebody, then you're talking about levels and layers of what can happen, will happen in that grieving process, because it's not linked here. That's why. And then what requires treatment, because you're going to see people's true colors drop in. And I want people to understand that. I'm not trying to say it's the right way, but that's the only way I can fix it without saying such an amazing thing that works. So I'm trying to do this in a separate manner, special manner, so that you guys understand that the integrated grief becomes a little layer. At that point, you come to accept the reality of the law, but you resume your daily life activities, but sometimes you're not resuming the same shit. Nothing is the same at that point. Then you think about it, it doesn't mean that you miss your loved one any less, but if you can get to an integrated grief and not end up in a complicated grief, which is where you yearn for the disease, we're very built about the idea of who they are. And a lot of people don't understand what I mean by taking that down like that. When you take a full win, okay, and you end up with an L, like it's an L shape, right? And it's moved at a table, right? So when you put another L here, you got a whole level of when you win, you win. When you lose, you win. And it's like, what is there times two? And you're thinking to yourself, what am I going to do? What am I going to do with all this loss? Whether it's financial, whether it's physical, whether it's mental. And then on top of that, you're dealing with other outside factors that affect you in the grieving process. So that's the degree process that's going to happen. But when we talk about safe grief, we have to talk about a sense of denial. And the things that people usually go into is how Dr. Kegel lost the model of grief. I want to explain it in that sense so that you guys can understand it from a psychotherapy and psychiatry point of view, and then from the life coach, how to process this in a short order form so you guys understand it. In the description of the primary company's primary response to the loss, it's are we going to take hell or are we going to make this a win in this, or am I going to go to a level of I'm going to take this journey but I'm still taking losses without getting anything from it? Am I not getting some winning points here in the affirmations of I am going to try to heal from this loss, although it's more painful. I don't want to stay following in self-pity. I don't want to stay in that moment, and I don't want to stay in that feeling of I've had a loss and I don't think I can function. We've all been there. We've all been knocked off our feet, and we have to get ourselves back up. And then we've all been through that denial state. And I want you guys to understand why it's important. Because when you're in denial, you do that. Then you get to the anger stage. Then you get to the bargaining stage. And then you get to depression, acceptance. And then on top of that, someone who's going through or might be going through that in the state of connect or might be going through it in all different other forms of how it's done. So didn't I tell you that everything has a word of life, everything has a circle of life? So when we think about that in terms of circle of life, we're thinking about the corners of our life. And we're all born in order. We all are part of the most limited life. When we think about our denial, and I just get away from all that while we're growing up and are experience to shape that level of crisis, whether it's at a higher level or a lower level, we're having to get back to our normal self to find our way back to ourselves and the sense of grace to walk and recover in our journey. So I want you guys to understand how important that is in that dogma allergy. So I'm trying to make sure I don't see it, but I was like, I don't want to sound like Caesar. Yeah. And so with that being said, y'all got excited for those parts. So when we think about our denial, and we're thinking about one of the layers of this can't be digital may refuse to accept the fact that something happened. Or the fact that it occurred. And in watching the children, TV, and I'm going to have a project to that. A lot of people don't have experience. That creep you go in stages of level and layers of I can't believe that the child passed away, no way, and I can't believe it happened. Like, tell me that's not true. So you're sitting in a state of shock and denial because it's like you want the person to come back and there's no way for it to come back, but for your mind to process that, all your viewers, that's initial shock. To move past that, yeah, a professional has to step in, or someone has to step in and let you know. Or support system, or your spark team, or your family, and let you know. You know, and then that's where you get into that anger, the crying, the bargaining, and the depression that may manifest from it. Well, the anxiety on the seriousness of the loss. And then, someone may intervene in that and become your support system, because there's a little layer of sometimes actually hit us like this. It's like, you're just like, how are the kids? Are just like, you know, so that's where you go to get to that anger game. Why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to us? Why is this happening to our family? And we want to purify with God. You know what I'm saying? And I want you guys to understand it from that point of view, that we've all been there. We've all been at that point where we just literally want to curse God because we're just like, you know what? BBB, I can't believe something's coming. This happened. BBB, why did you take this person? Why couldn't you take someone else? Oh, BBB. You know, all that kind of stuff that we all have said and done and agreed to process. So, when we think about anger, when an individual realizes that the loss has occurred, they become angry at themselves and at others, and they begin to lash out. They may argue or become argumentative or become combative, and especially if the deep loss or something like a Medina or a local layer of planning. Blame going on somebody that you love and love dearly or respect so much, and then when they die, then you're ready to fight the whole world because God took somebody from you. And when I say God took somebody from you, if your hours don't know that your number's going to get called. So you have to live your life to the fullest, go within a level of intent, order yourself back in your talk, and walk the work of serendipity and peace be still sometimes. Because sometimes you have to realize that the situation is unfair and you want to place the blame on somebody. You want somebody to pay for the fact that someone's dying and you're hurting. And when I talk to you guys, that is the most awful thought feeling to have, is that when you're bargaining. That bargaining stage is like seeing an option here. The third word is going to be a little bit of a little bit of a little bit of a little bit. You know what I'm saying? So your bargaining will do anything to change this. Can I get a $5 for this to change? Can I get a $10 for this to change? Can I get $100 going on or not? You know what I'm saying? So when you're thinking about this, and thinking about how we do anything to change this, it's just like that option, your option list, right? So when you're sitting up there and you're trying to reach that area to go say, I'll take it, you know, okay, you know, I have another option. You know what I'm saying? So when you're thinking about this, you're bargaining with God to bring back somebody you can't physically bring back. So you're literally telling God, I'll give you $100. So, you know what I'm saying? So when we're talking about level bargaining, that's what happens in that instance. The bargaining of the individual trying to change or delay the law or delaying the process of grief. So with that, for example, we might try to convince a partner to return after a breakup or search for a likely cure of a case of a terminal illness or disease and things like that. So those are things that didn't happen when somebody died. We want to go and thank the person with God, and bargain with God. Like, can I give you $100 for this person here? Can I give you $1,000? Can I give you $1,000,000? Can I give you $5? Can I give you $10? You know, and you're at that point where you're hoping that God will say, oh, okay, you know what I'm saying? But at this point, God's not like that. we know that God is an awesome God and a higher learning, a higher being, and a anointed, gifted, prophetic level of being that we don't get to see what we know he or she's there. So when we think about this, God is a God being. So in that, we can't argue with God when somebody leaves it. And it's easier said than done because I've been through grief so much, just like you said, I'm like, yeah. And I hate to say it like that. Because once you lost so many people that are important to who have come out of your life because of things that happened, or if it was necessary for them to pass away, or if God took them out of there because he saw fit, or maybe there's something that God took out of your life that he didn't find behind the same person, or the same people or individuals are adults, then you have to come to that stage as if. And then you think about this, you'll change your mind from I'll do anything to change that something that I'll do anything to accept it, I'll do anything to heal. Oh, I get back as best I can to learning to heal from resiliency. Because sometimes you will not heal from it, especially if somebody loves, and they don't learn how to cope with it and become more resilient in that, in the factors of trying to find a way to get back to yourself. It's kind of like dealing with somebody who's crossed the line with his heart death and Randy. You give them my heart death if I'm supposed to do. But you don't tamper somebody's heart death in their computer. And you don't do this to multiple devices and then expect somebody to say, oh, I'm sorry. So when we have people who are willing to give those devices, they want to nap out, we were trying to believe that once you respond in that manner, then we're talking about a little later. That's terrifying. You have to learn how to cope with people violate your personal right to business, and personal right to integrity, to its entirety, but there are being some rights involved. And the thing is, the same thing with death. You have to think about what the depression is that then from all that, because you're not believing that somebody's slimy or official that did IT hacks, things like that, or Victoria, or other people who did things like that. So any of you guys kind of like an example. But the example will be if St. Mitchell's mom died, or Randy's mother or sister died, or brother died, all in a car crash or something like that, then you would have that person as bargaining, I'll do anything to change this. But have the same energy you have when you're tampering with things, my belongings. I'm not calling that into existence. I'm giving you a prime example of how that can go hand in hand with somebody violating you, messing your whole day, things and stuff, probably getting gaslighting while you can act on the character, which you normally don't act like that. Or love a player of forming nasty husband when you're divorcing and trying all these crises of loving gaslighting devices, emotionally abusive things, and then you're saying, you got to rest up at that anger process. So you all have seen me in the anger process. You all have seen me in that process of being angry, upset. You've got me messed up and talked about the family. I'm trying to tell you that because I know it's wrong. And that's not my character because I don't like stuff that really used to cuss until I'm around people with black representation. So, what's your cuss, Brayden? And I used to say, Brayden, you're absolutely right. And I cuss more than anybody else. I put a dollar in the jar. I'd be at 5,526. Since we're adopted. But me and my daughter have talked about it. Because she's been through grief like me. And I want you guys to understand adolescent grief. It goes through non-existent depression and acceptance of what has happened. And I'll tell you, my wounded warrior actually helped me. My wounded warrior saw me go through some things in 2012 that nobody in the right mind would do to select mode, let alone buy the child to participate and do all the grief well as own damages that would go through me. And my child was just my baby went from being a happy, lucky old girl to being angry, withdrawn, and upset all the time. There's times when she would take it out of me. Oh, she's like, at least you care about my feelings, and I'm sorry. And she's punished like a sorry. And she's like, I know it's wrong, but I'm just so mad. So what I took it upon myself in 2017 is to have text boxes. You know, there's words to have conversations with her. And then we call her. And that's how we were in our level of dead talks about grief. And allowed me to be able to understand her. And allowed me to get into her mindset and begin to sit down as her first counselor, as her first life coach, as her first sofa, ACM, ATM chauffeur, taxi, nurse, lawyer, MD, you want me to say anything else that moms, moms, nurses, officers, and single moms, single dads, infants, like I'm the mom, and then I have a mayor for them. So you understand that I have to be in a sapphire. a whole mom and one and being a father and a mother. So, and I love it as a mother to be a mother. And, you know, I don't want to take on the role of being dad, too, as a disciplinarian and also confidant and nurturer. But it happens. So when a child goes to layers to allow them to grow from trauma, they would see their mother be traumatized, being angry about that, and realizing how far it went. And then realizing as the fact that it changed her, we had these TED Talks, but I was sat down and talked about it so that she could get better. And plus on top of that, I realized it was out of my league in the beginning. And I was like, let's get you a therapist. Let's get you to counseling. You should come to close to the situation. I want you to talk to a third party and be able to discuss yourself and be able to talk about it. Which has a lot of the parents don't want to talk to kids about our mental health and their mental health or things that cause us grief that can cause mental health deficit that we weren't born with or we did have deficits from the get-go and they reduce the guidance for me. There's a level of grief. So when we're talking about my daughter, it's the same analogy with the teenagers I left as young adults. And when I tell you that a hard journey with my daughter, and she's 7 years old all the way up to now. And when I tell you how hard it was to realize that it wasn't my fault because it took my little light of mine to shed light on me and say, Mommy, it's not your fault. Mommy, you didn't do anything and you deserve half what you've gone through. And it's not your fault. Don't beat yourself up, Mommy. You got to talk. You know, it had to balance the babies. They shed the light and they help you toward the guiding light to be able to understand yourself and understand them more. So I got to take the student seat, and my daughter was the teacher. So shout out to Tiara Lee. Because when I think about it, if she had to say, Mommy, you don't talk to her. The Mommy, what's wrong? Oh, she talked to me, I'm your daughter. Did you think I would love you? I wanted to remind you I love you. I wanted to remind you I will always love you no matter what. And I hope I never made you feel like I wasn't there for you. I hope I never made you feel like you could talk to me. And for her to say that and for me to turn around and I apologize to her, she's like, what do you apologize for? You do anything. But I said, I want to apologize to behalf of all the adults that owe you an apology. That's your grieving. And us having this check talk allowed us to have a little bit of understanding of what the grief process is. Because when we think about depression, when we think about anxiety, and other mental health disorders, if they said that's what happened, or levels of situational depression, or environmental depression, or levels and layers of severe, what we call not being integrated grief, but complicated grief. So when we think about the stages of depression, and the individual has come across recognize that the loss has occurred to go further with the level of abuse, having to process levels of what you're going to do about probate, well, all these types of different things, and even don't think about your death. This is why I always tell you guys life insurance policies. And it's okay about getting death and indemnity policies. Here's the reason why. And I'm going to tell you guys something. I used to process insurance claims. And that's one of my first tips, though, for mutual wealth. And I learned the business of insurance. And indemnity, health, life, and all those different things. And I was taught by one of the best about all these types of insurance, disability insurance, and all of that, and levels and layers of annuities and things like that. So we're talking about 440, 240 licenses and things like that. So let's make one story short. I want you guys to understand that when people do not prepare for death, you end up leaving family with debt, probate, and having to deal with assets and having to divide it up fairly amongst everybody. And this is the part of grief where depression can set in. Person doesn't have their affairs in order before their death or somebody drops like this. Their affairs may either not have been in order or nobody thought they were going to die. So when you have that level layer, that's why I gave kudos to some people who actually deserve those kudos, whether I feel like being personal, it was a professional level of being humble enough to say kudos to you guys. That family is at a loss. There's a lot of things that have to be rectified and balanced out. And this person just dropped like a fly, and we didn't know that that was going to happen. So when that happened, we all are taken aback like, you know, at that moment, it's almost like, who else is going to check? You know, and are you guys prepared for that? And then when it's your favorite, like I said, with music and people who are influenced by household names, when your favorite passes away, it does something to you, especially if you grew up with that music. That think about this on a civilian level, and being a non-celebrity, what about life insurance? to have that first voice in your life. Here's why. If you are in your late 20s, up to getting into your 30s, into your mid-30s, up to your 40s, you should be already trying to prepare for Social Security, and also your benefits should be already paid with some credits there. That's what happened with me, is that I had credits built up there for work for the child I was 19. I had more than enough credits, and when I was too disabled, I was able to do so. But let me tell you something. Do you think I want to be disabled? Do you think that I want to be at birth? Do you think I want to have some birth that has been more damaged? Do you think that I wanted that? I just knew I didn't expect the level of Asperger's syndrome high functioning. And, you know, I've had this conversation with my mother. I've had this conversation with my sister. You know, and they accept me as an Asperger. They never let me fall behind, even though it's Asperger's. And they don't joke with that. I don't break too very beautiful. So at that point, they let me excel, and I was gifted. So not only was I super smart, but my IQ was high. And then on top of that, it was extremely hot. So not only did I test gifted, but I was supposed to go gifted magnet tools for that. So I suffered since then a traumatic brain injury, but I did drop on 60 points from where it's at. So it means I still have superior intelligence. It does not mean that I'm better than anybody. It just means that I'm working on a traumatic brain injury. That's all the different things that happened to me, and it made me a little bit baby. Yeah, I said it. Baby. And let me tell you something. When you realize that your elevator is not going all the way up to the top of the stairs, or top of the stairs, then sometimes you have to go and get the help to me. That's part of mine with some traumatic injury. Combat, getting hit on the head, going to hit the floor, both handling of me, when I was being terrorized, for both gas, like intimate partner both. But that grief, the grief that came from it, is 10 years out. Whereas the event happened 10 years ago, and the events happened over 12 years ago of laughing and 15 years total, also known dating people and multi-level, the key players in all of this and the layers of grief that happened. Think about how I had to make that analogy with my daughter. And when I had to sit down with her and her doctor and things like that, when I said, you're going to have to. Like, oh, I don't need it. It's a dream for you. That's grief. I've been there. I know what it feels like to feel by yourself and you can't talk to anybody. I know what it feels like for people to listen to with fun and to listen to them understand while properly treat. So I want to give you the platform to give you kudos for teaching me that I need to talk more. But I need to give you a level layer of understanding about what happened because you didn't know. You didn't know half of what was going on. You only heard when I was getting hurt. You only heard when I was getting hit. You only heard when I was being verbally abusive. You thought I was going to die. That did something to you. So in that acknowledgement and apology, I just told my daughter, my mom, that you don't have to apologize, you didn't do anything. I said, well, it's not that I didn't do anything, it's the fact that nobody ever apologized to you and you needed your apology. Let me tell you something. Ever since then, it has really helped her out. She went from being angry and upset to processing her grief better, and she's with this facility people like I am and doing the joint with me, the program. She's also doing the program. Sanity is my wounded warrior. I want to tell you how amazing that little girl is. Now, y'all heard me drag her through shit in back. But if I'm done with it, it's And it is flat back even when it comes to being with a teenager. And when you're raising a millennial, it's totally different, right? So you know how it is when your teenager wants a flat back, and you're like, it's a millennial flat. You're raising a millennial flat. You're a teenager, right? So as a mother, I have to take off my clinician hat, my paraprofessional hat, and I have to be a mother. And I want to be a mother on top of that. So when I'm ready to clap back, be the honor, and tell her, look, beep, beep, you got me messed up, beep, 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 I'm your mom, beep, beep, beep. I had to realize we were doing that. Okay? So I want you guys to understand grief can really affect children just as much as it can affect adults. And being on top of the depression that leads into a level of mother overhead, whole levels of anxiety, panic attacks, and things like that are disorders from levels and depths of near-death experiences, being poisoned, provoked, gaslit, humiliated, tormented, all those different things. So going back to a death or sudden death or even multiple deaths in your family, and then you're just like, okay, who's next? You become so numb feeling it hours later. once you get this, that emotion of pure, unadulterated love of hurt, that will literally cause you a little layer, because you're sitting up there thinking, I can't believe this happened. I can't believe that this literally altered my life. You're sitting in a place of, why is this happening to me? And you said that the reason suffering part of all of that is a level and layer of how come and why. And it's like the who, what, when, where, why, when you're asking for questions, how did this happen, when did this happen, why did this happen, and you get stuck in why. And then why is it happening to me? And a lot of times we live in therapy tonight. Until we recognize that there is a loss. So that leads to radical acceptance. It's going to be okay. But it's like that song, baby, it's going to be okay. At that moment, when you're thinking about that phone full of your voice, that you tell your voice to tell your baby it's going to be okay now. In the beginning, it's not okay, and you don't want to hear somebody say, finally, you'll come to accept that loss. You don't want it to be final because it means that you have to put the final nail in the coffin. Situation logically, and you look emotionally and to terms with the loss and how it happened and with the situation at large. And in there, I want to break it down in each step on top of the grieving process so you can understand how people get stuck in one of those periods. Then let's talk about childhood grief. As adults, we learn to speak about death through a euphemism, okay? And through hope. Loved ones may pass on or have read a word like the dead, okay? Feel too blunt and painful. So when we talk to children, however, we have not yet learned how to put this code into a format that allows a child to understand that there's a loss without hurting them. So when a child experiences a real life loss while a parent is living versus a child experiencing loss while a parent is passed, deceased, or passed on, or dead, honestly, with kids about death because it's a taboo subject, so we've made a taboo, just like we've made mental health taboo, and even though it should, nobody wants to be the poster child for mental health. But when I tell you I took it as a level of something I want to do, as a life coach, wellness coach, health coach, the board coach, the wellness coach, the relationship coach, business coach, and mentor, a lot of people get affected in their business, their personal life, their professional life, their marital life. And then on top of that, this week only is going for the children in this day and age with advanced children who see things online before we can get to them and talk to them. It's a level layer of bridging the gap and knowledge of how to fill in those gaps and begin to use the level of understanding about talking to children about death. And then on top of that, talking to children about grief. And I'm going to give you guys some pointers about this. Allowing kids to feel comfortable about bringing up their feelings about death is another layer and level of giving them permission to talk about it. And to ask the questions and express the feelings. That's a short way to say it. They don't force the conversation, but have a conversation with a child is ready. And then teaching children about death. Let me tell you something. I've been taught about death so much to where when it happens, I'm like, okay. Sorry. Many kids don't understand that death is permanent. They might wonder how the deceased will eat or drink. They may wonder if the deceased feels any pain. If you have to explain to a person that a person dies, their body stops working, and they're no longer. But children might need a little bit of reminder this person will be hurt. That's when you go into levels of grief and what we call the other stages and whatnot. And fair enough, how that child can cope with that. And avoiding using euphemisms for death until you get them acclimated that someone just died or the terminology that passed away. But when you say things such as he's passed, or he's gone, or she's gone, or we lost her, that's not telling them exactly what happened. You have to say that, oh, so-and-so, Uncle Buck died, or Funky Buck died, or, you know, Auntie Mary died, or Auntie Biff died, or Uncle Biff died. You have to be able to say, hey, he passed away, but this is what it means. Or, hey, she passed away, this is what it means. Think about it, we want for someone, and not have to search for that person, because kids are kind of sick. That person, they want to come in there. They just lost them. So you mean they lost by my teddy bear? Or they lost my jewelry? Or it's not like somebody stole my jewelry, like what I did, but it's a different when I've lost a piece of jewelry and I can't find it. I'm there to get that jewelry back. It's the same thing with the person who died. You don't want to say, oh, we lost them. It should have been that child not registering. Oh, we lost them. We'll find them. They'll come back. So when you think about this part of my babies, you don't want that the children think that they're coming back anytime soon. They're gone. They're just gone, gone, gone. So children might need reminders that the person will not return. Then you move into a level of giving accurate information about how a person died without giving too much information. Talking to a child with a discourse and decorum that does not cause traumatic scars or levels and layers of misunderstanding. And then add levels and depth of how they died, or they were very sick, or they died in a car accident, or there was a frightening level of traumatic event that happened. You may not want to discuss that with the child, but you have to say, someone passed away, but their death was not a good way to go out of here. Therefore, that person has died and his dad passed away. So when they ask the question, how did they die? Then you have to figure out, well, I'm going to tell this child enough information to let them know that they died, but not how they died, tell that on a later date. Because you can tell a child, hey, I don't think it's good for you to hear how they died until a little later, maybe when you're a little older, and you can cope better with this. But right now, we just need to process the death, and let's get through that part, and I'm here for you, and I love you. Okay? That way, you're showing a child from the level layer of what they say, oh, so I got shot in their head blown off their body. See how that sounds? Or somebody had a bad car, they died, got flying up in the car. You think you definitely tell somebody, okay, can get that? You want to be able to say their child's mental health, emotional health, and not have nightmares or be frightened about death. And then on top of that, a child should become concerned about their family's own safety. And then on top of that, the death particularly related to a level of caregiver, as say a grandmother or mother or father or sibling or somebody like that, or uncle or aunt. You're talking about a level of layers that they're really close to that person like this. There is a level layer of having a little decorum. Can I say, well, Auntie so-and-so just dropped in, and then Auntie so-and-so just had a car accident or blown the smithereen. You can tell them that. They're saying, hey, Auntie so-and-so or Uncle so-and-so passed away. They have died. And that's what that means. What do you mean? Are they coming back? You know, when she says, what do you mean? They're coming back? No. Maybe they don't come back. Auntie or Uncle so-and-so, or, you know, if it's your mom or dad, you know, anybody, if it's your grandkids, if it's anybody that has passed away, I'm blaming. You have to say blaming don't come back. And I just want you to understand that I'm here for you, and we're going to take it one day at a time. Just remember you got to live as you die. And with that being said, you was the man twice the baby, you was the woman twice the baby, you live and you die. Well, that's a nice way of particularly saying that death in a nice context that does not end up leaving an emotional scar for the child. And you reassure children that they're safe and will always be careful by an adult. But what people don't understand is you've got to be able to say, hey, so-and-so passed away, but that one here, or my little sunshine, so-and-so passed away, but I'm here. Here's my hand. You want to take my hand right now? You want to hug? You know, something to make that child feel better. Because at first, when you finally realize they're not going back, that's when you see the child happy enough. That's when you see the grief. That's when you see them acting just like grown-ups do. When they get to throwing things and upset or they're grieving so bad and they take it out of someone. I had that situation when I was with someone and living with them. It's 1 year out from his mother passed away. I went from having an awesome young man in my life to a man that turned into crampus. The level of grief that he was going through, he's taking it out on me. He never asked about that day in his life. He's always out quiet. He didn't notice it. But the grief brought that to him later. And I realized he changed a lot. So when we think about guidelines for caregivers, Caregivers just don't understand that even if they're a first adult or an adolescent young adult or a small child, the other member gives choices. Use activities and rituals to remember that person who died. So let's go over those first 2 points. Giving choices when death creates chaos or having choices to restore a child's sense of control or comfort level. For example, involving a child in planning of the memorial services and then choosing how to participate in the memorial services helps the child to understand life and death to the full circle of life, like the Lion King. When you thought about Scar and Mufasa, and you think about the Lion King, how the dad died, and then the full circle, how Mufasa learned how to become a king. And then you think about the love of the layer of the baby, who was a cub, and went and grew from a small lion cub to a great king of the jungle. But it took a level layer of the circle of life, and those that were support Scar King, and things like that, through the activities. So using activities and rituals to remember the person who died. So I told you everything has a ritual. We get up every day and drink our coffee, correct? That's a ritual. We get up and read our morning newspaper. That's a ritual. We go to church. That's a ritual. We go and sit there in our cultures of our neighborhood, our cultura, our culture, and we sit there with our people just like we do our church folks. And we do our funeral professions play, our pallbearers, our funeral home directors. So we're talking about a level of rites of passage or rituals that we do for that person to pass on to the next everlasting. Okay? So this means to be the person's favorite meal, painting a picture or a shrine or writing in a journal or anything meaningful that will help a person to transition and that passage away to the next life, the afterlife, or anything meaningful that will remember that person's memory, heart, any of it. So when we think about all these different things, we're thinking about the children. Even if they're adults, there's a level layer of performing a rite of passage, a ritual, a theme. A theme is basically, hey, we're going to celebrate your life. We're not going to talk about anything bad about you, but we're going to celebrate yourself. We're going to celebrate your life. Because we were taught this from the top of me, I've been grandpa. And, you know, it's like my mom is my biggest sister, and my granny was the OG of this thing. When Blaney passed away, my niece passed away, and they made kids, had kids, and when we all came together for the film, and we decided we were going to put together alongside Blaney, my boots, mama, we made sure that Blaney had that volume right. So you make sure that that ritual, that rite of passage, and that level of passion from the physical and the flesh to the spiritual world, that is the ritual. But we all do rituals every day, just so you know. I just want you guys to understand, people get used to the idea that it's ritualistic to have people. It's ritualistic to go to church and pray for that person's body, their spirit to pass on to this afterlife. So with that being said, we have to empathize with the child's grief or adult's grief. We have to say that there is no right or wrong way to grief unless it's grossly negatively affecting our outlook of our life. And then on top of that, it's to feel after death. Are we going to continue to live? Are we going to mourn every day, all day, until we can get back to normal? Or are we going to find a way to figure out if our grieving is egregious grieving or is a level layer of integrated grief or acute grief, the integrated, instead of the complicated grief stages cycle? So some kids initially seem fine or even relieved, but later on express sadness, upset, and pain. And no one should be ashamed for how they feel. So it's the same thing with adults. We can grieve from a divorce or a bad breakup, or we can grieve from a level of sudden death. We can grieve from a sudden death identity, our life, our lifestyle, the things that we have before a person has passed away. So with that being said, sometimes you'll see a real challenge for people when people pass. So with that being said, we have to maintain a sense of normalcy and whenever possible and get a level of your structure. And then on top of that, in your rituals of that structure, finding a way to enlist a level of coping mechanisms so your morning routine, your daily routine doesn't get thrown off and things can be alive and thriving as that person is passing to the afterlife and as you perform at the funeral for that person's life and celebrate, not cry, but celebrate them. So you practice a level of self-care, which is another thing that techniques to do. Because when you think about this, your own ability to cope is built on a level of resiliency and factors of processing the grief appropriately. So take what you told and see that you're upset, angry, or crying. However, intense displays of emotion or which can be scary for children, you have to learn how to process the grief appropriately. So I want you guys to understand how exactly the correlation is that I've been through. There are times where I just want my daughter to be crying. It took me 8 years to cry. 8 full long years after 12 years, 15 years overlapping, and 10 years overlapping, and it reached as far as I've been playing for a number of years, and then I found out the reason why. That's what grief told me on another layer. It was like trying to put a brick on me, and I was like, you know, I can't even breathe. You know, I felt like somebody was constantly knocking the wind out of me and going, you know, it kicked me right there. And it was like, it became a little layer of let me be sure my child's mentally okay, and let me be a little worried for my child, and if I'm not fine, talk about myself. But I didn't realize that my child saw the level of grief deep. It's like, mom is so strong, but you don't have to show mom strong. And it was about the mouth of age that she's like, mom, I heard you. I heard you be angry. I heard the things that happened to you. And I hate that it happened to you. You have to apologize to me. But when I tell you this full circle story, I want you guys to understand how the mouth of age that my baby sat there and said, I'm here. And, you know, let's do this together. And I said, let's do this together. And we went and we did our therapy. And she's doing pretty good. She's in advanced placement classes. She's doing really well. And you would think that she would be psychologically worse off than what she would have, but she's a resilient, smart person, and she's trying so hard to teach her life back together again. And I'm helping her do that, but we had to have a conversation part. And then on top of that, taking advantage of what it was the layers of suicide prevention. I've never been suicidal day in my life, although people try to play me and do kind of mess up stuff at the local police department, and I had to get that straight out, but they corrected that. I'm not suicidal, never tried to kill myself at home. So it's where I had a good accident, and father and the mother, Tisha, that knew what happened, and she just now sat there trolling herself just this year. And it really just later made me go through over it, because I was like, this Tisha and her husband are the reason why this happened, you know, sat here playing my face after 11th hour of all this and all these years, and you know that you did this, your husband did this, your son did this. And then there's levels of multi-perpetrators that it caused a level of what we call more than awkward and levels of grief and depression and upset situation depression and anxiety from dealing with that. And when my doctors were like, you're only PTSD risk and Asperger's syndrome, and they told me this in 2016, and I was like, okay, but that's what's in my records, but they haven't documented it as something different. And the thing is, they changed the child Asperger's at the time of 4, but they didn't have studies later on that they know that is Asperger's was confirmed. Although I'm Asperger's doesn't mean that I'm not any less gifted, I am gifted. When we're talking about a level of suicide prevention, we're talking about children, just like adults. Anybody can get suicidal. It does not mean that we need to laugh at people and they say, I want to be up out of here, or I'm feeling the type of way. And that moment, it's a powerful emotional reaction to the death of a loved one. It's appropriate to seek professional help. It's appropriate to seek a specialist. It's appropriate to have some gap and someone to sit back and actually have been told what's going on, that they realize, hey, this is what's going on, step to bounce. So when that happens to me with my daughter, I wanted to give you guys an example of how resilient I had to be. How resilient I had to be was the foundation of bricks that was thrown at me and the deep bricks. I put a whole level of each one that built a pyramid of eternal circle, a level of not missing my mark in the healthy side of my third eye here, and saying to myself that I'm going to get back to my true self, my true police self, my I am self, to get back to the real me. But the real me is lost in the sauce of what happened. The real me got lost in translation of everything that happened. The real me guides the right along with the events that happened. So with that, I grieve the loss of my identity, who I was versus who I am. This person that I am now is a whole different person from the person I was. And I have built a little layer of strength and resiliency so that I can get to a point that I will be able to heal one day, just not right now, but I'm able to cope enough so I can function. And that with the help of the layers of the doctors and things like that, so that I can be present for my clients, has aided me in abilities to do what I do now and function at a high capacity. I want to share with you guys these things as the last coach, well, I'm self-coach, and then being state in forensic psychiatry psychology, I feel through the cracks and things like that over time, it tries to so many different variables and layers to what happened, to where a specialist would have had to go and do all the forensic work, just like my new specialist has done for me. And now on top of that, I read a book that the body remembers, and my specialist was beginning to sit there and understand it, and then my specialist did something amazing. He actually facilitated filling the lady underneath the bus and doing something because we had an actual telehealth appointment. So the Tanisha got caught in her antics because he said Tanisha wants to play games and whatnot, but she got caught, and it's unfortunate that she did. So not only did she sit there to Tanisha, but she thought it was funny to sit there and beat that diagnosis that I don't have. And the doctor already knows because he's sitting right there on my record that I have trauma PTSD for what happened. And then on top of that, I'm answering it. He's like, documented by my therapist out there in 2016 when I went through the most egregious levels of law. So while the Tanisha show is playing about a diagnosis that's not there anymore or anything like that, because it's misdiagnosed and they then updated the file, then the doctors actually helped me. And then they were like, you know what, we're not going to go with people because this is an egregious mess. So I didn't realize what my doctor did. He did reverse psychology. He knew I was going to react to what he said, but I kind of figured out what he did after that. The issue repeated, but I talked to my doctor and my telehealth support. So it means that my ex-doctor wired his house and lost me and laid it my whole knee's fiction. And not only did he play psychology, there's a little layer of he crossed the line she can't come back from, and I should sue the grace copy for a day survival. But with that being said, it took a elite team of doctors that I got assigned to, because there's a level layer, there's failures where I went through the crack. There are people who shouldn't be a doctor right now because they didn't do their job, didn't ask the right forensic questions. But they were quick to go and make me feel like the bad person, or the person who was damaging me, told me exactly where the shots I was at. That would have been looking near with a little layer like, oh, wait a minute. How did you know where I got dragged to? Because you're the one who started this, and what I told everybody was true, that you said that I said you were going to ruin my life, and you subsequently did, but you also went to other places that people unrelated to. But you knew if you were going to kill you. So when I tell you as a life coach, wellness coach, health coach, divorce coach, and as well as a marriage coach, and how it grossly negatively has affected my business model, it was a level of grief so deep than me that I'm a strong person that I had to seek professional help. I had to advocate for myself and say, I don't want to go through this back. But with that being said, as a life coach, wellness coach, you're going on for a apprenticeship to become an MD, or as a psychiatrist, psychologist, ME, medical examiner. It's going to take a lot to undo the damage that happened to me, but to undo my daughter's damage the way that I have and her specialist have, and me advocating for my daughter, taught me that it's important to always stand up for what you believe and stand up for your rights. But then on top of that, also make sure you have the right specialist and therapist or life coaches, wellness coaches, or parent professionals to help you to heal so you get to a place of feeling later, but coping for right now while you're going through the journey and transition of grief process. But with that being said, you know, you think about the case based Anthony Bedouin who died from suicide. You would think that there are the happiest people in the world, but they took him out of here. So it's never funny to poke fun at somebody who's suicidal. It is not funny to poke fun at somebody who is a cutter. I'm not a cutter, I'm not suicidal. I'm just telling you guys, predecessors to suicide is cutting. Predecessors to a level of suicide attempt or a level of mentioning things over a period of time and eventually doing. So a lot of you people who are taking issues, taking catchers, or tournament camp after both bullying and harass people, even strong especially hit the point saying, I'm about here. I don't want to be here. But for me, I never want to not be here. I want to be here and I want to live because I have a greater calling in my life and I have a greater level of anointing that's in my life and I have a greater calling and what I'm trying to do with my life as a life coach, wellness coach, health coach, sports coach, as well as a marriage and counselor and a business coach as well. So in my paradigm of coaching, a paradigm of life, a paradigm of understanding that, the breakthroughs, I want everybody to understand what it is for child guidelines from teen world, not online for children, adolescents, young adults, but also for young adults and middle-aged people, and also people who are older stage degrees, who are also who have lost someone near and dear to them. So I want you guys to understand that process and be able to work that out and understand that it's necessary to support, to turn through such as Christ. Because if you don't, you will become a person who will not grow. You will become a shadow of your former self. And you will I have eliminated one. So I wanted you guys to understand all of that, and on top of that, finding what the effects of laws and things like that, because if you lose yourself and you lose the level and layer of who you are, it's hard to get back, breathe back into a level of control and understanding of your life. So sometimes a care professional is what you have to go through. So with that, no matter what emotions that you experience, and know that you are being supported in all of that, I want you guys to understand that you are safe to be able to express yourself when you put your finances up. So you can go online, attach that love offering to things like that for $5 Diva Coaching, $5 Diva Online, and Talk Radio, which is $5 for Talk Radio, Diva CC, plus more. And I want you guys to understand you have to deep breaths. Kind of them to show you. You breathe. You got to be able to breathe. You got to be able to meditate. And then you have to think about the laws of psychotherapy and psychoeducation, legal education, sociological education of how to breathe properly and effectively. So you won't end up in a place of laws of bereavement, and then you go down this rabbit hole and spiral of not having your life in control, but others will be trying to control the narrative of how you're supposed to breathe. And I want you guys to understand there's different types of grief. And the normal grief reactions and things like that. So we're going to go over that, and we're going to go over those levels of how you have to understand it and bereavement and supplemental levels of understanding of that. And then on top of that, the levels and layers of how that works through the definition of anticipatory grief, normal grief, complicated grief, or chronic grief, or levels and layers. So I want you guys to understand all of that and the characteristics and definition. But we've been on here an hour, 17 minutes, 40 seconds, a little longer than what I thought I was going to be on here for. But I want to talk about all this before we get into the grief process and being able to understand it and to be able to understand it rightly so we can get into the nitty-gritty of loss and bereavement and finding ways to cope for all types of bereavement and as well as delayed grief or chronic grief or what we call level of layers of trauma, PTSD, or level of anticipatory grief that you know something's going to happen, but you've got to have a support team there for you. So with that being said, I want you guys to understand the complicated grief process, and then you have to understand the type of grief, the trauma grief, and then on top of that, level of layers of understanding all that and us breaking it down piece by piece, and then getting back into digging those shadows we've made flowers and love the breakthroughs in all of that. So I wanted to thank you guys for coming to my seminar and my live about this, and so that you guys understand that grief is not linear, and grief and loss is not just one person. It is a whole group effort and a whole level of support system on and offline and environmental, so that the grief and passing process or the ritual of the fume of life goes on without shit, without major levels of colossal calamity or drama or things like that. So with that being said, I hope you guys like the presentation on there, and hopefully y'all got a good understanding of it. So when we go into our resiliency, coping and resiliency course tomorrow and talking about grief, that we'll go piggyback off of this, and then we're going to go back into a level layer of self-love after the next couple of days. I just want to make sure that I got everything good for you guys. And then we're going to read the past book that I wrote. And then understanding death and dying and the preparation for death and dying and coping with a bad loss and things like that. And then injuries can take to a level of loss and grief and things like that. So we're going to have a level layer of talking about what to do and how to make a comfort kit. And then on top of that, how to know when you're grieving, how to know when you're past the point of grieving, the trauma and upset and things like that. Like, I have to recognize it and realize it's okay to get through that. Because it takes so monumentally bad to where I'm like, you know what, I'm waking up, keep writing, I'm waking up, you know, stressed out, angry, stressed, punished, and it was bad, and I wasn't able to sleep until after the next somebody left them home in Tennessee, and she was putting me sleep next to him, put his arms around me, and I would fall asleep, because I felt safe to my life, then I literally didn't feel safe anymore. I literally didn't feel emotionally safe, environmentally safe, and I didn't feel like what they call a level of stability in my life, because my life goes up and down, probably curvy, and it's just woo, woo, woo. I walk down, all around, up, down, all around. To the point is, like, oh, God, I don't know if I'm going to survive another day of this. And once you get into survival zone, and you forget to breathe, then you just delayed breathe, like I told you. So, with that being said, we're going to talk about creating those comfort with the things, and then I'm going to talk about comfort kit, And then we'll talk about the way to do it, familial, non-familial, and then be a support team for everybody on and offline, especially just like the example of DMX passing heart, loving death. A level of, I hate to say that, no pun intended, but a level of love to respect for this man and the level of layers to walk with his family must be feeling and those that want his death, pray his memory, so celebrating and literally celebrating his life is amazing. A level of love achievement and life outside of things that he has overcome in life. So in that, I wanted to end it on a positive note. So let's talk about something cool. People go through a lot of problems in life, okay? Some of us find it easy to go through such problems. Maybe we have greater, higher calling and ability to be what we call stronger than most people or survival is finished. But something that's of great support is understanding that feeling any individual experience and being able to understand someone from a depth of perception instead of a depth of, oh, you should be grieving like this, will help a lot of us become more emotionally intelligent. And then what many people are evading grieving and things like that are experiencing, it's not okay to avoid grieving. Sometimes the best thing you can do is grieve to make a breakthrough and have the sun shine in and then turn the circle of light and all see kind of what you need to do to grow from it and light yourself and begin to shed the light on your grieving process and then move forward in your journey and take it one day at a time. So I hope that helps you. I understand grief is a normal feeling. And but when something for someone is wrong, you will feel the tip of faith inside your heart, mind, body, your soul, and spirit. But just don't find yourself in tears or upset or angry. But if you get past that and start processing it properly, you'll find a lot of resilience and coping mechanisms to get you a sense of healing at some point in time. So with that being said, I'm going to take y'all out of here. Thank you all.